Thanks for listening to the best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Might want to stay off Facebook. Might want to stay off the Twitter machine. The Mueller report's being released this morning, right? If you want to immerse yourself in sports, might be a good time. Maybe pull up all those NFL schedules, just be going through them. I don't know if you want to be hopping on social media in a couple of hours. Just warning you early. Interesting news, too. I didn't hit this out of the break. The Texas A&M has lost their athletic director, Scott Woodward. He is going to LSU to replace Joe Oliva. This doesn't happen that often where an athletic director in conference moves, particularly one who's been as good as Texas A&M's AD here lately. Grab Jimbo Fisher, who I think is going to win at a very high level at Texas A&M, and then also went and grabbed Buzz Williams from Virginia Tech to take over the Aggie men's basketball program, and he is now going back home to LSU. So the LSU athletic department has been a little bit of a mess. They ended up with Ed Ogeron as their head football coach after pursuing Jimbo Fisher and Tom Herman and not being able to get either of those deals done. We'll see what happens with Will Wade at basketball there. He got reinstated. And by the way, tip of the cap to LSU because they reinstated Will Wade as basketball coach 10 minutes before Game of Thrones came on. So you want to talk about a way to just I always think for PR purposes, the best possible time to announce news is when you know everybody's going to be fixated on something else. For instance, be a great time if you're in the world of sports to come out with news right as the Mueller report gets released today because everybody's going to lose their mind over the Mueller report coming out. 400 pages, media is going to go insane, brand new talking points. It's going to be an utter battlefield out there. And it's a good time to sneak in your news, which might be a little bit negative and would otherwise get a lot of attention. You always want your new news, if it's bad, to be coming out when something else is going to distract people. It's like the American public and the American news media in general are like kids when they get shots. You know how when a kid's about to get a shot and you have to get your vaccines or you have to go get blood drawn or whatever else, get your finger pricked? If you can distract the kid and have them looking at you and not paying attention to the needle that's about to go into them, if you can do that, it doesn't hurt as bad, right? That's the same way that news is from a PR perspective. Let me bring in Eddie Garcia. Eddie, you are a resident NHL expert. Is it good or bad that the 8 seeds have been kicking the crap out of the 1 seeds in the NHL playoffs? You have the Columbus Blue Jackets eliminating the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-0. And now you have the Colorado Avalanche going up 3-1 on the Calgary Flames. 7-1 straight up the 8 seed against the 1 seed in the NHL playoffs. Good or bad for the sport?
I think in the specific case of Tampa Bay, not good. But generally speaking, I do think it's good. I think it's good to be unpredictable. I think you're more interested in watching if you don't know what's going to happen. So, and you know, Calgary in that case, that's not nearly as shocking as what happened with Tampa Bay. Flames are good, but there are a lot of good teams in the West, and that one's not going to be as big a shock if it does happen.
There, anything can happen, I think it's fair to say, in the Stanley Cup playoffs, and we've already seen that in the first, 2 weeks of action that has been going on there. All right, I want to bring in the crew. Everybody else, confess, did you immediately check to see what order your favorite NFL team would be playing their games? I sometimes think that the NFL is like a drug dealer. They know that every NFL fan out there is addicted. And sometimes the way that they create storylines amazes me because we're in the middle of the NBA playoffs. We're in the middle of the NHL playoffs. And it's like the NFL just has to flex. And they say, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to get more attention than your actual playoffs by releasing the order in which your team will play games. And I got to be honest with you, at 7 o'clock Central Time, my time, 8 o'clock Eastern, I got out my phone to see what the team, what my team, who sadly is the woebegone, awful Tennessee Titans, who are just going to be a disaster this year, I'm convinced, what their schedule was going to be and what order they were going to play. Danny G, were you waiting to see what order the Raiders were going to play the games that you already knew they were going to be playing in?
My name is Danny G, and I am an NFL crackhead.
Isn't that ridiculous? Yeah, I mean, it's one thing if you'd say NFL draft is next week, right? And by the way, let me say this. We're doing a live show in Nashville from 6 to 7 p.m. I'll be doing a live evening Outkick leading into our coverage of the NFL draft. So Joel Klatt, Jay Glazer, Rob Stone, Chris Spielman will be live on the radio throughout the NFL draft from Nashville. I will be their lead-in, so if you are going to be in Nashville for the NFL draft, we'll be live outdoors at LP Field, which is Nissan Stadium or whatever the hell the Titan Stadium is called now. They've created some sort of NFL village in the parking lot surrounding the football stadium there. Everything, my understanding is free at the NFL draft, but you can come watch us from 6 to 7 Central Time, 7 to 8 on the East Coast. You can listen. So we're doing a primetime one-hour version of Outkick in the evening. Now, let me say this. You're out there right now, and it makes sense that you're going to care about the NFL draft. But the fact that all of us tuned in to see which order our teams would play games is just evidence of what a drug dealer the NFL is. And you were there, Danny G. You woke up and you made sure, you know what, I got to make sure I know what order the Raiders are going to be playing games.
Oh, and even before that show came on, I was listening to Colin Cowherd on my way home yesterday, and somebody had leaked the schedule to him in advance.
Yeah.
So he wasn't getting into specifics, but he said, uh-oh, if you're a Raiders fan, rough. This is going to be brutal. Somebody's sticking it to you from the NFL. And so it piqued my interest. The Raiders usually get a tough schedule. But then I wake up to – I left the NFL Network on my TV because I wanted to wake up to it. And counting the London game, the Raiders are going to play five straight games on the road with a bye in there from weeks 3 to 8. Pretty brutal. And I think they have 7 of those games are going to be early start times.
Yeah, that is
You know, teams on the West Coast never play very well in the early games.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm a Titans fan, and I looked at their schedule, and I said, okay, they're starting 0-4. I'm not going to get that invested in this year's team. I know I was saying, like, I was potentially going to go retire, but when I saw the schedule come out, I was like, I mean, geez, this is a pretty tough schedule for the first four. They go on the road against the Cleveland Browns, right? I mean, the Cleveland Browns are going to have 4 primetime games. So that gives you a sense. The NFL, based on primetime games, gives you a good sense how good they think your team will be and how entertaining they think that that your team will be. And then the Titans get to play the Indianapolis Colts at home. Andrew Luck has won 11 straight. I mean, it's an unbelievable statistic. Andrew Luck has beaten the Tennessee Titans 11 straight times. And then they go on the road against Jacksonville and Atlanta. The Titans are starting 0-4. And I saw that, and I was like, okay, the first four, their season's over. They're going to start off 0-4, and we're going to be talking about where the draft pick's going to go and what they're going to do with Mariota. So that kind of is some piece, you know. So that's the way that I was. Dub, were you eagerly awaiting the release of the NFL draft? I mean, the NFL schedule?
I mean, I don't even have a favorite NFL team, and I was still all over this thing, checking out the Sunday night games, Monday night games, Thursday night games. And hats off to the Atlanta Falcons. I don't know if you saw their official team schedule video release. The Game,
it's like
of, Thrones
Game of Thrones
scheme.
Yes.
I mean, that was pretty cool, I thought. But, yeah, I don't even have a favorite team, and I was all over it.
What about you, Eddie Garcia? Were you embarrassingly way too invested in what the Steelers' schedule was going to look like?
I don't think as much as you guys so far, but my wife is a huge NFL fan, so that makes it a big day in our house. And we like to go to a couple of road games every year. So finding out what the dates are and maybe seeing how that fits into our plans and around holidays and all that kind of stuff certainly made it to where we needed to check it out and find out what dates were the games here and there and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the holiday angle, you know, and trying to figure out how exactly that schedule is going to break down. But I think the in general, I would say the only real benefit of this is kind of figuring out what the NFL thinks of your team based on primetime games. And the Browns having 4 primetime games is like, wow, they are the it team coming into the season. Roberto, I know you're unfortunately a Raiders fan too, but were you all in on this?
Nah, not really, mainly because I already know who the teams are going to play, and I'm not really planning on going to any away games, really. So, no, I wasn't really too invested in it. I was sleeping.
I'm amazed by the ability, and I think the NFL deserves credit here for their ability to turn events. Like, they basically create a season-long, year-long event out of a season that lasts for 4 or 5 months. They do such an incredible job of turning everything into a major event. And the draft next week is going to be a prime example of that. The draft will get way more attention than the actual playoffs that are going on between the NBA and the NHL playoff teams. All right, let me go ahead and bring in Eddie Garcia, get an update from you, find out what's shaking the world of sports.
Well, of course, we've got playoff action going on every night in the NHL and the NBA. We'll start on the hardwood where the Rockets beat the Jazz 118-98. James Harden, triple-double in the win for Houston. 32 points, 13 rebounds, 10 assists as Houston now leads that series 2-0. Bucks are up 2-0 on the Pistons. Pretty easy win for Milwaukee, 120-99. Giannis Antetokounmpo, 26 points and 12 rebounds. Eric Bledsoe, 27 points in the win. Celtics in the best game of the night. Get by the Pacers, 99-91. Now, Boston was down 11 points to start the fourth quarter at home, but they rallied for the win behind Kyrie Irving's 37 points, and Boston also holds a 2-0 series advantage. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs, more first-round games. Avalanche over the Flames, 3-2 in overtime on a Mikko Rantanen game-winning goal in sudden death. Calgary, the one seed in the West, is on the brink of elimination. Colorado holds a 3-1 series advantage. Stars over the Predators, 5-1. Rupe Hintz, 2 goals, and Ben Bishop, 34 saves in net for Dallas as they even the series at 2-2. And the Bruins go to Toronto and outscore the Maple Leafs 6-4. David Pastrnak with 2 goals for Boston as they even that series at 2-2. Online car shopping can be confusing, but not anymore with True Price from True Car. Now you can know the exact price you'll pay for your next car, so visit True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. We'll be back to Outkick the Coverage in 10 seconds. But first, a word from Farmers.
At Farmers Insurance, we know a roof can withstand a lot. One exception being an airborne car. Seen it, covered it. Talk to Farmers.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Underwritten by Farmers Truck Fire Insurance, exchanges and affiliates. Products not available in every state.
Now back to the Geico Outkick Coverage Studios and Clay Travis.
This is, I think, by the way, we talked some about this, and we've talked a great deal, I would say, about it on the show. I want to make sure I hit this, but let me circle back around. Have you guys been paying attention to this Robert Kraft news and the continued battle that's going on down in Florida? I think that this is an example of when people like me who have large voices need to speak up, all right? I think that the behavior of the state of Florida prosecutors and their attempt to humiliate Robert Kraft has been beyond the pale indefensible. And let me explain exactly what I mean here. I have been putting on my lawyer hat on a regular basis on this show for several years now, anytime there's a major legal dispute that's out there. And I've been telling you, hey, this is what I think is going on. This is what I think the impact is going to be. This is how, from a legal perspective, I would analyze this situation. And so if you listen to this show regularly, you know from the moment that Robert Kraft got arrested, I have been very skeptical that he was going to be convicted of a crime. And I can run through quickly why that is. But the primary reason is I think that this investigation in Florida was not designed to protect anyone. I think at some point in time they decided we need to justify the amount of energy, effort, and resources we have spent on this investigation. We need to find somebody famous and humiliate them, okay? I think that is 100% the real story that's going on in the state of Florida. And Robert Kraft, 77-year-old widower, goes into a massage parlor in Jupiter, Florida, and pays for a massage and then may get a happy ending, and it's on video, okay? The video evidence was obtained through a warrant that suggested that sex trafficking was going on in this massage parlor. And the argument for the sex trafficking was, well, these women are being held hostage, they aren't being allowed to leave, and when they announced these Robert Kraft charges, if you remember, they made a big show about, well, this is not just a consensual sexual act where Robert Kraft is paying for a massage with a happy ending potentially. This is sex trafficking. These women are being held hostage. They can't leave. Have you noticed that they had to admit, the state of Florida did, oh, by the way, there was no sex trafficking going on. These women were voluntarily working in this place, coming and going as they saw fit. And so they now, the state of Florida, released leaked news yesterday that they were going to try and release the Robert Kraft video in order to further embarrass him, even though that video, I believe, was obtained improperly. And let me explain. Some people are like, well, how can evidence be obtained improperly? And I think that's a question that a lot of people have out there. How does this evidence get tossed out? Let me give you an example. There is something called the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine. And the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine holds that even if you find evidence that somebody has committed a crime, if you obtain that evidence improperly, it is not allowed to be introduced as evidence of a crime in a trial. And the idea behind that is, let's say you pull somebody over who is driving down the road. And when you pull them over, you discover that they have a ton of cocaine in their trunk. If you didn't have a justifiable reason to pull over that car, the fact that they have the cocaine in their trunk is not admissible. Now, if they have a broken taillight, or if they have expired tags, or if they ran a red light, or if they were driving in a haphazard fashion, driving across the line, and you thought maybe they had had too much to drink, if there is a reason for a police officer speeding, certainly, if there was a reason for a police officer to pull over that car, and then they were able to discover as a natural result of a reasonable prosecutorial stop, reasonable suspicion, that something bigger than that happens, then that evidence could be admissible, right? I mean, that's kind of the storyline in general. I don't think any of this evidence against Robert Kraft is going to be admissible in a court of law, and I think the state of Florida is just now trying to humiliate Robert Kraft. Because what reason at all is there for this videotape of him in a massage parlor naked worthy of coming out? Now, I've also argued, I think that Robert Kraft has a pretty good defense against this solicitation charge, because if he paid for a massage and then the woman who is giving him the massage decides to do something more than give him a massage, and then he pays her a bonus on top of that, if there's not evidence that he was paying directly for sex, I don't understand how you can even get him for solicitation. And that doesn't even consider the fact that my personal belief is this shouldn't be a crime, right? You can agree or disagree with me, but it's the oldest profession in the world for a reason. There's a lot more demand for sex than there is supply of sex. Men, by and large, are willing to pay for sex. And if you're out there and you're saying, well, I've never paid for sex, it depends on what your definition of sex is. It depends on what your definition of paying for it is. But I'm curious on the crew. Do you guys get the sense now that we have moved from Robert Kraft committed a crime to the state of Florida now is trying to use all of their power to simply humiliate Robert Kraft? I mean, other than to make jokes about it, is there any justifiable reason at all why Robert Kraft, it's not just Robert Kraft, by the way, it's like 30 other guys that are in this massage parlor video. Is there any reason other than making jokes about why these videos should be released into the public domain of naked men, other than trying to humiliate these men? It seems it's now clear there was no sex trafficking going on. It's now clear that these were consenting adults. It's now clear that the video, I believe, surveillance and the warrant that was obtained for it was obtained improperly. In other words, this evidence is not going to be admissible. It seems to me now that the state of Florida and the prosecutors here are just trying to humiliate Robert Kraft. Danny G, do you get that sense too, that we've moved from, oh, this guy did something incredibly wrong, to now the state of Florida is aware they're not going to be able to convict him and they're just trying to humiliate him?
Yeah, for sure. It seems like this story has moved from Robert Kraft being embarrassed to the state of Florida being embarrassed, or they should be, at least, because it's what started out as what everyone thought was going to be this huge human trafficking story is now what? is this.
An old dude paid for yes. a happy ending, and you want to yeah. release the video exactly. to humiliate him because he's famous.
How did we get from that to here? How did that happen?
I think because Robert Kraft got good attorneys, and I think the media still has not covered this as aggressively as they should. To me, the question is this an appropriate use of state resources to spend months with videos secretly installed watching men get naked and get massages? And remember, some of these guys probably did just get massages, so they didn't even commit crimes. There's probably lots of men who were on tape that may have just gotten a regular massage, and the state of Florida is recording them naked in a massage parlor without their knowledge at all. And now they're just trying to be humiliated. To me, this is a really bad invasion of privacy. And I think very often our government is overreaching in terms of charging people with crimes that are not violent offenses. But this is like you're invading somebody's privacy. You're trying to humiliate them. I mean, am I on an island here, Dub? Or when you hear this story, are you kind of starting to think the same thing?
No, I think you and Danny G both hit the nail on the head. I mean, to me, this is totally inappropriate. They're just out to embarrass Robert Kraft and all the other people that were on surveillance.
I mean, the release of the tape, Eddie Garcia, are you with me? The release of the tape here, there may not have been a crime that was committed at all. It just seems like the state of Florida is bitter and angry, and they're just, at this point in time, trying to humiliate Robert Kraft. Do you get that sense as well?
Well, I think it's hard not to when you read that they had a deal that, you know, they wouldn't release the tape until after a judge had ruled on it, and now they're trying to kind of circumvent that to get it out there before the judge can rule on it. I mean, what's that about?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you live in the state of Florida or anywhere else, for cases like these, I mean, to me, this is just a blatant attempt to try to humiliate a guy. I mean, I just actually feel pretty bad for the way this whole thing has gone down. And also, I think a lot of times the media is used by people in positions of power to try to get their story out there. And I think the sports media has done a bad job of covering this story overall. There have been some people, some exceptions out there, but you know, we live in an era where everybody wants to immediately judge. And that's one of the things that I try to get people to step back from and say, okay, let's wait and see what the actual facts are, as opposed to letting everybody need to make an immediate decision. Because there are a lot of people in the world of sports, I think, who, Robert Kraft's a good example, so is Reuben Foster. I mean, the guy gets absolutely raked over the coals, released by the San Francisco 49ers. The Washington Redskins sign him. Everybody ridicules the Washington Redskins. What are they thinking signing Reuben Foster? It's amazing he can get away with domestic violence like this. And then it comes out that he didn't do anything wrong, really, in the grand scheme of things. And he has to pay a couple of weeks' salary in order to be completely cleared. But we will try and convict somebody based on one side of the story before they even get an opportunity to respond. And I just don't think it's healthy. And Robert Kraft has the resources to be able to fight this. But I've been on this for a long time. The criminal justice system is not fair, right? The color that matters the most in the criminal justice system is green. If you have enough money, you can fight the charges that are brought against you, which a lot of people don't have if they don't have the same amount of resources. And I think Robert Kraft is emblematic here of how somebody cannot really do anything wrong, and the state can decide to come after them in an aggressive fashion in an effort to humiliate them.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We've got the Warriors tied up at one game apiece after they blew game two, 31-point lead. DeMarcus Cousins injured. This is maybe the time when the Warriors have had a lot of doubters. In particular, Kevin Durant hasn't looked very good in the series so far. Patrick Beverley has been annoying him. I think when I heard these comments from Kevin Durant, that you got to run to the window and get down as much money as you can on the Warriors in their game tonight. Kevin Durant was asked about the series, and he had this to say.
I want to have a little back and forth with Patrick Beverley. I'm Kevin Durant. You know who I am. Yeah. I know who I am.
Kevin Durant, and the discussion was actually really interesting surrounding that as well, talking about the fact that he can shoot over Beverly and the way Beverly plays him. He hasn't gotten the benefit of the calls because he's like a gnat kind of out there, kind of just trying to get as close to him as he can. Said he didn't blame him. That's how he makes his money. But
you know who I am.
Yeah, you know who I am. I think that the Warriors are going to come out and utterly dominate. It's my favorite bet tonight in either NHL or NBA action going on in the playoffs, I am going to go all in on the Warriors tonight. I had a good night last night. If you watch Lock It In, I won all three NBA games last night and won a lot of money. So I've been on a little bit of a roll in the NBA playoffs. But and that's even with some of the games, you know, being tough to predict. Like I had the Spurs +7, and they were a 19-point lead with 6 minutes to go, and they ended up not even covering. So that was a tough one. Last night, maybe I got it back a little bit with the Celtics with a remarkable cover against the Pacers. If you had bet the Pacers +7, you really took that one on the chin, or +7.5. But I feel like the Warriors are going to show up and dominate against the Clippers tonight in L.A. Does anybody, open voice to disagree, anybody on the show feel like this game's going to be competitive?
I mean, I think it's going to be competitive, but I think the Warriors will prevail in the end.
I think Warriors by 20 or more. Uh-huh. I think they are going to show up and utterly dominate against the Clippers in Game 3. And I understand.
Because they're so pissed off of how they blew it.
Yeah, I think they feel like, look, I think Steve Kerr started a little bit early. I think when he went back and watched this game, he'll probably say, you know what, I think Steph only played like 3 minutes once they got up big. I think he was trying to limit his minutes. I think he was working on a few different things with the lineup, especially in the wake of the DeMarcus Cousins injury, to try to figure out exactly what makes the most sense. And so I think he took it easy. Thought the game was over when they got up that big. And for all intents and purposes, it typically is, right? I mean, there's a reason why this is the biggest comeback in the history of the NBA playoffs. And so I think Kerr got a little bit overconfident and allowed the Clippers to come back and keep it close. I don't think he expected his team to lose. I think they will play with pedal to the metal from the moment that ball is tipped against the Clippers in Game 3, and that this will be an utter destruction for the Clippers. And the Warriors, I think Kevin Durant's going to go off. It wouldn't surprise me if he scored 40 or 45. I think Steph and Klay will have big games. Klay Thompson seems to have decent games against L.A. teams in general because he's basically playing back home, close to home. So I think this is going to be of all the games that are going on tonight, and I know the Warriors are a substantial favorite around 8.5, but I think this is going to be an ugly, ugly look for the Clippers.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
We're joined by John Morosi. We bring him in now to break down everything in the world of baseball. John, appreciate you joining us. But I want to start with hockey because you're also a hockey expert. How wild was the Columbus Blue Jacket win over the Tampa Bay Lightning from your perspective?
Well, good morning, Clay. It was really one of the more improbable first-round results we have ever seen in any sport in our country. I'm comfortable saying that. I cannot fathom anyone would have predicted a sweep by the Blue Jackets of the Lightning. In fact, our Mark Adelberg, researcher at NHL Network, said it's the first time ever that any President's Trophy winner with, of course, the best record in hockey, has ever been swept in the first round of the playoffs. So literally, it had never happened before. And even then, Clay, the Lightning had a 3-0 lead in Game 1, and they blew that lead, and then they never really regained their footing. So this remarkable story, credit to John Tortorella and the Blue Jackets. They've got some talent between Duchesne and Panarin. It's really been an explosive offense for them so far in this Cup playoffs, and when a team like that, even when it's an 8 seed, Clay, when they get going, when they get confidence, this is the one sport where the playoffs can really shock you. You saw it certainly in Nashville, where the Predators made it to the Cup final as an 8 seed. We've seen that happen before. So this is not nothing right now is off the table for them. It's a remarkable story for really sports in North America. And to think about both the Lightning and the Penguins, a real standard team and a mainstay in these playoffs for so long, both being swept in round one, remarkable. And certainly the Flames have really had their hands full with the Avalanche, and the Preds are now even with the Stars. So a lot of unpredictability here early on in the postseason.
Who would you predict to be in the Stanley Cup final right now?
Well, I will, full admission here, I had the Lightning going, Clay. So
yeah. I have to say they were plus 180. I mean, they were a massive favorite. It's not just you.
In the East. I think based on the way that everyone has played, I want to go out on a bit of a limb here and predict the Islanders. I mean, their offense has really impressed me, and I think they've gotten some really stout goaltending as well. When you beat the Penguins like that in the first round, and certainly you could say the very same things about the Blue Jackets, I've just been very, very impressed by the Islanders. So I'm going to go Islanders, a bit of a back-to-the-future look for them. And then in the West, I'm going to go with St. Louis. You know, I know they lost the last two games, but they were so hot coming into the playoffs. And actually, I basically picked them to win the Western Conference, so I can't abandon them at 2-2. But the West, I mean, think about it. The Flames, best record in the West, they're down 3-1. So there are just some extraordinarily surprising stories developing right now in the NHL.
All right, so that's what's going on in the NHL. I actually want to ask you this question, too, because we're going to talk about this, I think, in hour three, and yesterday we talked about it as well. Alexander Ovechkin knocking out the 19-year-old for the Carolina Hurricanes. I said that I believe that fighting in a situation like that is a bad look for the NHL, and I'm curious what you think.
Well, in general, with fighting in the NHL, I have never been a big pro fighting guy. I don't really understand why it's necessary, and especially at this time of year. When you I take a look at this, Clay, and take a step back. My general comment on fighting is this: that to me the best brands of hockey that we see as a hockey fan, the Olympics and the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the Olympics has no fighting because then you're disqualified for the next game, so no one ever fights in the Olympics, like no one. And in the NHL playoffs, it's a rarity. It's a really big rarity. So I don't think the game needs it. And certainly, you know, baseball is principally the sport that I cover, but I've always said this about hockey. If you love hockey, certainly the way I do and the way a lot of people do, if you love the game for the game itself, your game, you should love your game so much and see the virtue in it so much that you don't need fighting to in some way add another entertainment level and dynamic that you don't need. There is so much action whistle to whistle, there's no need to me add other elements of the sport in that way. So that's how I look at it. I respect the opinion of those who are on the opposite side of that issue, who believe fighting is a place in the game. But I personally do not. I would rather see it not part of it and just have the good hard play be during the course of the in between the whistles.
Why do you think they haven't eliminated it? And the reason why I say that is football is insanely physical. I know you're a big Michigan fan, right? College football in the NFL. If you fight in college football or the NFL, you get kicked out of the game immediately, and or in some cases, like Leonard Fournette last year, you get suspended. Like, you miss games. I don't think there's anybody out there who's like, oh, football isn't a very physical sport. But they say, you know what? The game itself happens during the whistles. If you take it beyond the whistle, you're going to get suspended, and you're going to miss games for fighting in uniform pads, everything else, big physical sport. Basketball has completely eliminated, basically, fighting. And if it happens, it's a major issue, and guys get suspended and face significant consequences if there are actual punches thrown. Hockey could stop fighting very easily. You mentioned the Olympics. Hey, if it happens, you get kicked out, you're not going to play, the consequences are severe. Why do you think the NHL just hasn't stepped in and done it and said, hey, we're taking this out of the game?
Well, there are a few reasons. Number one, the commissioner has said, and this is his word that he has used, that he believes that fighting acts as a thermostat. And by that he means that the threat of a fight, the existence of fighting, tends to limit the amount and temper somewhat the extent of the violence between the whistles. They would, if you spoke with a fan, with a long-standing fan of the Edmonton Oilers, for example, they would tell you about, well, Gretzky would have been injured by a cheap shot many times over had it not been for Dave Semenko on his line protecting him, and that is, there is some truth to that, and that's And that is it's difficult to all of a sudden drop a hat and tell all the NHL players, listen, you're just not going to take liberties and you're not going to have cheap shots against the best players anymore because we're just not going to have fighting anymore. It would represent a dramatic change in culture. And there are a great many questions about the history of humanity. Why does culture take a long time to change? It is something that the Canadian origins of the sport, this has been a part of the game for a very, very long time, and that has been very slow to change. So there's been some just somewhat stubborn insistence on the way things used to be. There is some validity, as I said, and I think the commissioner is right, that they believe that the existence of fighting does tend to limit the amount of violence between the whistles, we can say. There is a certain segment of fans who like fighting, and they are a very vocal group, and their opinions and their beliefs on that are heard by the league, and the league says, you know what, if our fans, they're going to pay their hard-earned money, if a lot of them want to see fighting, then they will on some level be rewarded by seeing fighting every now and then. The other thing is the game, and I sort of look at it the other way. There are some people that believe this keeps a type of person in the sport who is either endearing or deserving of a spot in the NHL, the enforcer. That is a job. That is a hard paying job, a high paying job by any reasonable societal measure, and it keeps this hard working individual who is almost universally regarded as a gentle giant, great teammate off the ice, and a loyal one on the ice. It keeps that person in the league. Now that's at the expense of someone who is probably higher skilled in terms of their ability to actually play the sport, but that roster spot is taken up by the sort of prototypical, hardworking, brave, fighting player. And for whatever reason, there is a certain sense, I think, among the players that person deserves a spot in the National Hockey League, and certainly that's been the case now for many, many years.
A man of many talents, John Morosi, breaking down the larger issues surrounding the NHL, and he's also here primarily to talk about baseball, so let's dive into that. Coming into the year, the expectation was Yankees, Red Sox, both going to be phenomenal. It's going to be a real battle in the AL East between those two teams. Nobody told Tampa Bay that. While the Lightning may be collapsing, the Rays are hot. Is this an aberration through 18 games or so, or have you seen something to suggest this could continue throughout the season?
I think the Rays, Clay, are as good of a team as there is in baseball. And now they've got their ace pitcher right now, Blake Snell, is in the DL after a unfortunate mishap with a decorative object that fell on his foot. So he'll be out for a start or two. The Rays hope it's no more than that. But their pitching depth is extraordinary. They had a very good rotation last year that allowed them to win those 90 games, even as the Red Sox and Yankees were winning 100-plus. But to that group, they've added for a full season now Tyler Glasnow, who is pitching like an all-star, and then Charlie Morton, who has come on and really added a lot to their rotation, both in experience and in performance. They really can pitch. There was so much talk last year about the very avant-garde way that they run their pitching with the opener, and the reality is the reason the opener works is they've got a lot of good pitchers. And the key thing there, this is the one little quick inside baseball point to make, they're able to cycle in and out their pitchers. I think of the 13 pitchers on the roster, 10 of them are on option, which means they can be sent to the minor leagues and back without passing through waivers. That allows them to protect their depth, and they're not locked in, for example, with the Red Sox. The Red Sox have a lot of struggling pitchers, and they can't do anything with them. When you've signed Chris Sale to a multi-year extension, and he's struggling like this, you're not going to send him to the minor leagues. You can't do that. So there's an inherent flexibility the Rays have. They use it well. They understand who they are, their identity, and right now they've got one of the best pitching staffs in baseball.
What letter grade would you give Bryce Harper on his debut with the Phillies so far?
An A, I think. You look at the way the team is right now, they're in first place, and Harper actually, his overall performance, Clay, this spring early on, I know his average isn't terribly high, but his OPS of 948 is basically higher than it was last year this time. So he to me is off to a strong start, and more than anything else, the team is winning games. That he was brought in to entertain and to win. We talked before about how his numbers sometimes haven't always added up. the key thing he was brought in there to do is to bring in that presence to the middle part of the lineup, allow the other hitters to have productive starts to the year, and sure enough, Rhys Hoskins at 981 OPS, Andrew McCutchen at 929. You've got the veteran guys there, and even the young guys are having really good starts. I think a lot of it's because they feel less pressure now they've got Bryce Harper around. So I think Harper overall, they're in first place. He seems to really embrace the city and their fans. I think an A so far for Bryce.
The Dodgers. We had Clayton Kershaw finally return. What do you think about Kershaw and the star-crossed Dodgers have started off 12-8? What have you seen from them? Are you optimistic or pessimistic?
The two key things for them this week, quality start from Kershaw, quality start last night from Walker Buehler, of course, from Vanderbilt University, 6 1/3 innings and 0 earned runs yesterday. The biggest questions that I had for the Dodgers were, is Kershaw going to be healthy and is Buehler going to be healthy? They both had some issues with their shoulders early on in spring training. The other part has been, to me, the amazing season so far of Cody Bellinger. He made a swing adjustment last year. He had some struggles, but so far this year, batting .429 with power. He, to me, is an extraordinary talent, and they certainly have lost Kemp and Puig since last year. It's worked because Bellinger's production has more than made up for their loss.
The Cubs have the second-best run differential so far in the NL, yet they are sitting next to last place at 8-9. Is this a statistical anomaly, or should Cubs fans be nervous?
I think both. I think eventually they're going to rise up. I'm not worried about their super long term. I think to your point that they'll find a way to I believe ascend up the division in pretty short order. However, it is a competitive division, and I still am seeing some worrying signs from Yu Darvish. Yu Darvish this week, he still walked a lot of batters against the Marlins, was not able to finish six innings. They need more from him, candidly. They need more. I know on some level, nibbling, as he talked about that, and trying to nibble around the strike zone and throw strikes, that's been a part of his game for a long time. But with the money he's making, Clay, he needs to be better than that because at this point in time, the Cubs simply don't have as much money to spend elsewhere. And so they need the big stars they've spent on to pitch well. So they need Darvish to be great, and they need Morrow to come back healthy here and help stabilize the bullpen very soon, because the bullpen's the reason why that with that great run differential, they still have lost a lot of very close ball games.
We're talking to John Morosi. Last question quickly for you here. So far, the AL West is the best division in baseball when you look at it top to bottom. Houston right up the top, Seattle right there. Who's going to win this division? Is it the best division in baseball?
I think the NL Central is the best division in baseball, most even though they've only got and actually can make a case for the NL East as well. I don't think it's the West. And I think it's in the National League. You've got more competitive teams, I think, overall, top to bottom in that league. But I think Houston wins the division. We've seen the Mariners amazingly fast start, but they have now lost six in a row. And Houston's lineup, just their overall strength, Altuve being healthy, Correa being healthy, Bregman doing what Bregman does. They've been a lot of fun to watch, and I still love their rotation as well. So I think Houston's the best team there, and it may even be the best team in the American League, Clay, with the way that both the Red Sox and Yankees have struggled. The best division in baseball, I would go in terms of at least four teams strong. I would say either the NL Central or the NL East with that amazing group there of four teams. And I'll just say NL East. NL East for me right now is the best team in baseball. Just the way that they brought in so many great talented free agents during the course of the offseason. Love the way those teams are playing right now.
Outstanding stuff as always, my man. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate you getting up early with us.
My pleasure, Clay. Enjoy the Preds games coming up, my friends. It's been a really competitive series so far, and three great games to come, I think.
Yeah, I may go on Saturday.
Excellent. Enjoy.
Yeah, no idea what's going to happen in that series, or really any series going on in the NHL right
now. Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I'm just glad I was there.
Boys and girls.
I thought he thought I was like this ginormous piece of chicken.
Dying time's here.
I have a boa constrictor stuck to my face.
Sam, you have a what?
This is Animal Thunderdome.
I think this, well, you got maybe several stories, I'm not sure, but when I saw this story, I thought this seems like really bad luck. Of all the animals to get killed by, I wouldn't have anticipated this.
Yeah, this is horrible. Paul McDonald went outside to feed his pet deer on Wednesday morning. The Australian father never came back inside. His wife, Mandy, and the couple's 17-year-old son, Ethan, heard that something was wrong on their property, which is in northeast Victoria. They went outside and found Paul being attacked by their pet deer, according to the Sydney Morning Herald. Ethan, the son, ran off to get help as Mandy tried to save her husband. The male stag, which the couple have owned for 2 years, shifted his attention and aggression towards her. Ethan came back, was able to save his mom from the animal by whacking the deer in the head with a slab of wood. ABC reports that she has been airlifted to a Melbourne hospital and stays in critical condition. She suffered injuries to her upper body and legs. Responding officers shot and killed the deer at the scene, saying that they were concerned for the paramedic's safety, but it was too late for Paul McDonald. Unfortunately, the farmer died from the injuries inflicted by the deer. He was rushed to the hospital, but it was too late for him.
So a deer?
Yeah.
That just seems like awful luck.
It really does. You don't hear about deer killing people, but...
You do, but it's always because, like, a car hits a deer.
Yeah, right, exactly. You don't hear about a deer attacking somebody like this, especially somebody's pet. But what's this guy's name? Barry Howlett of the Australian Deer Association. That's a thing. He told the Morning Herald that the fall months are deer mating season, which brings on higher testosterone levels.
And it's fall, by the way, in Australia, I guess,
yes,
right?
And so they can be way more aggressive this time of the year. So he says he's not that surprised.
That's kind of a tough quote to say, I'm not that surprised that a deer decided to attack and almost kill two people who were raising it.
Yeah, it's a horrible tragedy.
I mean, I understand when people who like have tigers as backyard pets or lions or whatever else and something goes wrong with those animals, but you don't anticipate a deer just going crazy and killing somebody.
Horrible. And we know all about alligators in Florida because of mating season there, as we talked about in yesterday's Animal Thunderdome.
Yes.
Well, an 80-year-old Florida man fought off an alligator in his backyard. He was able to pin it down until police arrived. Ed Chapman said he took it upon himself to try to capture a 6.5-foot alligator this past Tuesday in southwest Miami-Dade County. Chapman says his dog Rocco alerted him to the intruder. And so he ran and got a noose pole. I guess it's a thing to have if you live in that area, to try to capture it. He says, I went and got my noose, pulled, and got it around its neck, Chapman told WSVN-TV. He swatted me with his tail, though, and knocked my legs out from under me. Chapman struggled with the alligator until it was in his pond. He says, we argued together until we got all the way over to the pond, and I held it down while I also tried to dial 911 at the same time. I said, I just need some help. I got it contained.
We need this 911 call.
I know, but I need some help. I can't get it out of my pond by myself, he said.
Did he think that he was going to take the alligator, even if he got it, like, to move?
That is a great question.
It's a 6.5-foot alligator. I would understand if it was, like, a small alligator, but even then, you have to take it somewhere.
Well, and this guy's a grizzled vet. Listen to this. Chapman says he has a lot of experience with dangerous animals because he collects venomous snakes for research.
Oh, of course he does.
And he breeds wolves.
Breeds wolves?
Yes. There's a great video of the police on his property.
Do we have an interview? We need to get this guy on the show.
No, I mean, the news report, they don't talk to him. Well, I guess they do for a second. I'll see if I can pull that audio. But the video, they focus on the police officers trying to help him corral this gator. Pretty amazing video. I'll tweet that out at Danny G Radio, and I'll tag you at Clay Travis if you want to go to our Twitter accounts and look at this video.
I don't even understand what a man could be thinking trying to get the alligator out of his own backyard. I mean, if it's 6.5 feet, regardless, he was going to have to put the alligator, what, in like a truck and drive it somewhere to get rid of it.
That's a great point.
I mean, how weird would you think it was if an old dude just pulled up in a public park, undid his like truck, let's assume that he has a truck, dropped the gate, and then an alligator just climbs out and gets in the water.
I mean, noosed him!
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what he was thinking in general, because he's going to have to – maybe he was going to kill the alligator, I don't know, and eat it. I mean, that's a possibility, certainly.
Yeah, I am not sure. It would be awesome to talk to this guy.
Yeah, I would love to get him on the show. I mean, the fact that he's breeding wolves is pretty terrifying to me to begin with. Who buys a bred wolf? Is there a huge demand for wolves out there?
Not that I've ever heard of.
I mean, that doesn't seem like a pet I would want to have either, not to mention the poisonous snakes. I'm sure that guy's had poisonous snakes escape in his house before, because we talk about the fact that everybody who's ever owned a snake, somehow the snake has gotten out of the cage. But, yeah, 80 years old and deciding to wrestle with a 6.5-foot alligator in your backyard, questionable decision-making, I would say, in general.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.